And Marla had a vision for this show, and she really wanted to show a middle-class working black family that was not part of a ghetto situation or environment, and not the higher-class professional environment that Cosby was involved in. She wanted to show the predominant status of black people at that time.
Yeah, I think it wanted to be accessible to the people who were probably going to be watching the show. And we also did a number of shows that certainly had themes in terms of trying to get a message across. And but I think in general, Marla wanted to be able to relate to as many people as possible.
There. Isn't that better?
Mm. You smell good.
Oh, I know what's missing.
Yeah, you.
So we had those kinds of shows that people could really connect with because they were human issues. It wasn't just things that black people dealt with or white people dealt with. They were things that humans are dealing with all over the planet.
What about our romantic evening?
Oh, honey, I was being silly. I haven't got anything to complain about. I've got a good life, and you're the most wonderful husband in the world.
Don't you think you're overdoing it a bit? How about the most wonderful husband in America?
That too.
And so I thought that was really a good thing. So there's so much that you can do, and that's what I wanted to do with television, make you laugh but also educate you at the same time.
And also at the time, still, there weren't that many, well, certainly weren't many black women that had the kind of power that she had. And she felt she wanted to use that in the what she thought was the best way possible. Often it was with minority writers to try to give them a break, and and there were a number of minority writers on the show, which I attribute to Marla's insistence that that occur.
If I'm accurate with my information, it was Marla who insisted that if I was good enough to write a play that a TV show could be based on, I certainly should be a member of the staff and participate in the production of the show. And I was very happy and thrilled to do so.
It was a family show for everybody. The only thing black about the show sometimes may have been the language, the jargon, the hipness of the neighborhood or the spirit of the ethnicity of being black. But other than that, it was a family show that everybody could watch.
1863.
Mary, you got an ancestor who fought in the Civil War.
It better have been for the North.
It's interesting, the ethnic-based part of it is something we didn't really work at that hard. We got stories that worked. They could have worked on other shows, too, and probably did sometime or other. And they took on the aura of ethnic because of the actors and the settings, and that's where that came from. I don't think we really worked at that at all.
We wanted the general public, not just the black audience or the white, or just the general public, to see that there were families that did exist like that, and it all came out of our own personal experiences, you know.
Well, what would you know about it, Mary? You married.
And you're not.
And especially from the standpoint of the era that Mary and Lester were raised in, and the time they came through, like, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s.
I wanted Hal to be a strong man, a strong father, and a strong husband, because too often we have husbands and fathers and everybody's making fun of them. And I don't think it's a good image. We have to have strong father figures for these young men and young women.
Brenda, is that you?
Yes, Daddy.
What did you do to yourself? Have you been out on the street looking like that? Mary, why'd you let her go out like that?
He was firm. He was clear. He was fair. He was funny. And he delighted in watching from the sort of the sidelines, watching these women jousting for position.
I just said, oh.
Yes, I know, but it's the way you said it.
Lester, do you believe this?
Yeah, you can put an awful lot into an oh.
I had a lot of help from a film I had done where I was surrounded by ladies when I did Private Benjamin. So I took a lot of that and incorporated it into the show in my character as a father, as a supposedly head of the house, and all of that stuff.
So Hal, A Daughter is a Precious Thing, I think was the name of it. We had Hal giving her the message about she had the makeup on. And so he set her down, and he had a talk, a heart-to-heart talk with her.
I think as long as you keep wearing that makeup, Calvin may as well keep wearing his blindfold, because he's never going to be able to see the real Brenda anyway.
It was interesting to see the kids on the show grow and develop, especially Regina King, who years down the line became a very successful actress on her own, thinking of those roots, you know, how she was at the beginning. And she learned a lot from watching Marla and learning to be a professional and learning her lines and being prepared.
Tell her you will call her back.
I've been trying to tell her that. Diane, I've got a car. Are you serious? Dad, did you tell Calvin you were going to feed his head to an alligator?
I think Regina was in the play. I'm not quite sure, but I think Regina was in the play. Then Elena, who played Rose, actually had a daughter the first season who disappeared after the first season and never to be mentioned again. So that part was cast, and Jack Kay was cast. And the interesting thing about Jack Kay is she came in initially to read for the part of Rose.
When I got this audition, I was doing a soap opera in New York called Another World. It's now defunct. I played Lily Mason. I was a, you know, lady of the night. And I'd been on there 2 years, and I was doing very well. I had a contract, and I got in, and I read for the part of Rose. So they said, okay, could you come back in and read for the part of Sandra? I went to the bathroom, changed this red dress I had, red shoes, big old gold earrings. I put this lipstick on, I teased my hair. I came back in. I read for that part, and they were rolling.
When we saw how funny she was, which was always our sort of first priority, and that she just had, you know, she just had that thing about her, you know, and she was such a character that it gave us a way to go with that character that was a little different than the standard way. And it just shows you how sometimes the casting stuff, you can just get lucky in it.
But I got to thinking of the bigger picture. There's so many others less fortunate than I who would suffer immeasurable hardships. I started thinking, aren't they a part of me? And I they? We are the world. You know what I mean?
Jack A. approached that character very seriously and found a real truth in that character. I mean, she really reached into that character. It wasn't something she just put on. She knew who that lady was.
When I developed the character of Sandra, it was a combination of my girlfriend, Val Jean, who talked like this. Everything was like this. Oh, girl, Mae West, I wanted the sex appeal. I wanted the hook. I wanted to get the angles on it. And Lucille Ball. Those are the three people from whom I drew.
It's been my experience that men who act this mysterious are always one of two things: raving lunatics or married.
I just wanted to be funny. I was only contracted to do 7 shows. And then my character was gone. We were on camera for the pilot, and we rehearsed for about an hour and a half on camera. And they stopped, and they called me upstairs. I thought I was being fired. They called me upstairs, and I had to change my contract. And I became a regular. And this is after about 4 days, you know? So it was pretty, it was like, zoom, it was ba-boom. So I didn't know what to do. You know, I just was trying to be funny so that I could be the funniest. You know, I just figured funny is better than not funny.
Oh, my heavens, I know you had company. Am I interrupting anything?
Yes.
Oh, hello there.
You must be Mary's brother, Lewis. I'm Sandra Clark.
And I remember we had this discussion, and I said, well, I don't want to be funnier than Marla. Marla said, yes, I want you to be funnier than me. She said, because then our show will get picked up. And she said, she was so gracious. She said, the funnier everybody is, the better the show will be. And that's been my motto ever since.
I wonder if she has any interesting negligees, or is it all that flannel stuff like yours?
It's not the flannel, but what's in the flannel that counts.
Lester must have some kind of imagination.
Well, when it comes to you, men don't need imagination. Your lingerie lights up and says, "Welcome aboard the Love Boat."
I think that the writers did a really good job in taking advantage of the popularity of Sandra and expanding that part for her, making it work, helping her make it work, and at the same time keeping the other characters very strong and very and in a very and they all supported each other.
Mary, you're only going to make things worse.
Listen to your husband, Mary. He's the voice of calm in a rough sea.
When I want a poetry reading, Rose, I will ask for it.
The hope was that they could be a little bit like Lucia and Ethel, you know, which so many shows try to emulate. And, of course, it can only be one Lucy and Ethel. But in terms of the dynamics of it, there's similarities, you know, that were involved.
Well, I was living in New York at the time, and my agent said, we'd like to fly you out to California to read for this pilot, 227. I said, excuse me, one second. I put the phone down. I went in the other room. I did that, you know.
God knows how long.
Yeah, and I heard the O'Briens had another crack in their living room wall.
Girl. I heard the O'Briens got a crack in their marriage.
No!
Yeah. So I went out. And I read for the part. I didn't know a wonderful woman was reading for the part, too. I didn't know that, and I'm glad I didn't. And what they did was, the day of the first rehearsal, that they were doing I guess what they call the network thing. And so Ruth went in, she came back out, and the whole cast sitting there waiting, you know. Then I go in, came back out. And they came back in the room and said, congratulations. I was like, whoa. You know, I it was like, I'm always so amazed whenever I get a part, you know. But that's how I got the role. And so I became Rose Lee Holloway.
Pearl, we're about to have the neighborhood watch meeting.
If I don't do these clothes tonight, tomorrow, Calvin is going to be playing basketball in the news.
As Rose related to Mary, and as Jack A related to Mary in terms of bail me out here, what do I do? Pearl was the one that Mary would go to.
And that character in the play was kind of like a Greek chorus. It always was making commentary on what was happening out on the street. And in the play, the street was a lot more raunchy than the street in the show. And she, like off camera, she would tell me stories about when she was a 19-year-old girl back in 1919 or something with John Houseman and how they established a theater in Washington, D.C. and all of that stuff. And then when we'd come onto the set, I incorporated the feeling I had about her because she was like a female mentor to me.
This is your favorite, a sweet potato pie and a bottle of homemade wine. I stomped the grapes myself.
I worked with her going back to the days of, Sanford and Son, the Jeffersons, Baby, I'm Back. I had worked with her a lot. And she was a professional.
You know, I stood by them this day 50 years ago.
I was married for 50 years. But, of course, it took three husbands to do it.
Helen Martin has the best timing of anybody I had ever seen. I mean, she had been doing it forever, you know. And she just knew what to say, when to say it, and how to say it.
Now I know why my foot was itching. It's itching to kick somebody.
You
flapping, but you ain't rapping.
Any sitcom can be done in a living room, you know, with the kitchen to the left and, you know, the front door to the right. But this one started on the stoop, which gave it a distinctive look.
The stoop was something that was a little different. We hadn't done that, or the writing team, in anything like that before, really. And it was a nice way to get started.
I'm glad you're still here.
For us, it allowed us a way for everyone to come together because the building was a community in itself.
Ah, the stoop. That was my favorite set on the show. And the most challenging one to shoot in. When they were doing scenes on the stoop, there was no way that she could actually see the people that she was talking to on the steps. And nor could the people on the steps see Pearl. So they had a mark, basically, that they would look at, maybe the third brick from the side or the banister on the stoop, and that's who they would be talking to. And there was often some very interesting and very important dialogue being exchanged and very emotional dialogue being exchanged from the window to the steps, and they couldn't see each other.
Shame. I'm not promising anything.
Oh, well, thank you, Mary. I'd appreciate anything Lester can do.
We didn't have a lot of money for a lot of swing sets the first season, so how many places can you send them? They couldn't always be on the stoop if they wanted to break away from the apartment because the kids were in there. So the laundry room became a logical place to send people to talk.
Oh, and as long as you're doing a wash, Sugar, why don't you throw your wig in? It's getting kind of dusty.
In the pilot episode, that's where they had the meeting where they had all the tenants come down to discuss the will. So, yeah, and it was, again, you look for ways that you can bring people together naturally without seeming forced.
The laundry room was sort of like the kitchen, you know, in people's homes. Everybody sort of gathers in the kitchen, and the laundry room was another community place, and people were there, and that's, you know, another place where we could hang out and, you know, solve the problems of the day or create them.
If I want my daughter to look like you, I will send her to clown school.
I understand what your problem is, Mary. You can't help but feel inadequate, so you're lashing out. But you can't get under my skin.
I guess not. With all that makeup, I'd need a chisel.
It was home. Like in the theme song, like it says, there's no place like home. And that's that building, that stoop, the laundry room, it was just part of our lives.
So when we did the pilot, I knew then. I told the cast, I said, we're on our way. I said, you guys just be careful. And that first year, everybody was professional. We were standing in the wings, going over the lines before we went out before the audience for the live taping and all that kind of stuff. And it was wonderful. It was a wonderful situation. Everybody was working to keep the show going. And, I mean, 3 weeks into airing, everybody in town was talking about it.
It really, I think, was unique at the time and worked very well. And because it attracted more of a general audience, people could connect to it and relate to it on a lot of different stratas.
I just miss it. And the show still stands. It still stands. I can look at it today and still laugh.
I think I particularly liked working with the whole cast. They were friendly, lovable people. And it was a pleasure. It was a nice way. That was sort of the end of our career. We retired after that, and it was a nice ending.
We got what we were trying to accomplish. We got that because we wanted people to sit down and in those 22 minutes have the kids there after dinner or whatever and watch us and be thoroughly entertained and identify with us.
I had a white couple run up to me in Vegas and say, you're doing us. You're doing us. That's us. And so whatever we were doing on the show, they connected with so thoroughly that they felt we were doing their story. And that's really what we wanted.